Welcome to the Natural Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang, and this is episode number 255. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living interview series, today's guest is historian, author, John Previs, who along with Forbes magazine editor-in-chief Steve Forbes will present Blueprints of Empire, Ancient Rome and America. We'll talk about their presentation, among other things, and answer questions like, do empires come and go, have their moments, and then disappear from history's stage?
History is nothing more than a stage, and upon that stage, it is only the actors who change, never the scenes. This was Marcus Aurelius, the philosopher emperor of Rome in the 3rd century AD, sitting in his tent along the banks of the Danube River, his army arrayed along the south bank to keep the barbarians, the impending invasion, from happening. The emperor reflected on the challenges facing Rome, and as much as it pained him, he was compelled to acknowledge that this once great empire was coming to its end. The philosopher in him found consolation in his belief that what was happening to Rome was the result of the inevitable course of history. Empires rise and they fall. The same had happened to Egypt, Persia, Greece, and Carthage, and would happen to those empires yet to be born. Was Marcus Aurelius right? Is history simply a stage upon which empires and their leaders are little more than players who are allowed their brief moment before they exit and disappear? And most importantly for us, has history condemned America to follow the same pattern of decline and destruction as Rome?
That, of course, is our guest today, John Previs, who will be presenting, along with Steve Forbes, Thursday, September 6, 2018, at the National Museum of Natural History about ancient Rome and America. This will be a great session. Please join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show via internet phone, John Previs. John Previs, welcome to the program.
Paul, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be able to talk to you about this.
And I'm delighted as well. You're going to be at the Smithsonian Associates. The topic is Blueprints of Empire, Ancient Rome and America. That is fascinating, John Previs. And so I wonder if you'd give us a little bit of a brief description of your upcoming Smithsonian Associates presentation.
Paul, you know, Steve Forbes and I are going to be speaking on it. And Steve and I, what brings us together on the philosophical plane is that we both believe that history repeats itself. And to quote, you know, the much used verbiage of Santayana, the famous philosopher, history repeats itself, and those who do not learn its lessons are condemned to repeat its mistakes. And so what Steve and I are looking at is America today, and I think we're all very concerned about the direction that the country is heading, and taking a look at Rome. And are there parallels between the two societies? Are we in fact going down the same road as Rome? Have we experienced many of the same things that the Romans experienced? And are there lessons to be learned from that, both instructive lessons? And so that's what we're looking at. I'm going to be outlining a brief outline of Rome's history, some of the most salient points that I think are responsible for Rome's development and its inevitable fall. Steve will then draw the parallels with America. And what we're going to try and answer for our audience tomorrow night is, are we condemned to follow the path of Rome, or can we reverse it?
Well, let's dig down a little bit into that, John Previs. Let's tell me a little bit about the comparison between Rome and America. Is there one, and what is it? Give us a little bit more detail, kind of half answer that question for us here.
Paul, as briefly as I can be, because we're going to be looking at 1,200 years of Roman history, I think there are very strong parallels. That doesn't necessarily mean I have a completely pessimistic outlook on the course for America, but I think the parallels with Rome are there. First of all, Roman history can be divided into three sections. The first is what we call the monarchy. From about the founding of the city in 756 BC by Romulus to the fall of the city in almost 500 AD when it was sacked by the Vandals. So three periods. The second, the monarchy lasts from roughly, again, the founding of the city until about 500 BC. And at that point, the monarchy was overthrown. It was a revolution. The aristocracy took control. And in a very unusual move in history, we have a monarchy overthrown and replaced by a republic. And now the Romans go through about a 400 to 500 year period from 509 BC down to 27 BC, the advent of Augustus, when Rome is a republic. This is the most democratic period in Rome's history. We're going to have the Roman Constitution, laws to protect the rights of citizens. We're going to have popular assemblies where the citizens can express their will. We have the Senate, which is the repository of the stable elements in the society, the senators appointed for life, and then the third branch of government being the executive branch, elected by the popular assemblies every year to carry out the functions of government, to administer the state, if you will. So the Senate prepared the legislative agenda, which the elected consuls then took to the popular assemblies to be voted yes or no into law. And you can see, Paul, that's the foundation of our government. If you look at the founders of our country, you look at people like Jefferson, you look at Adams, you look at Madison, all of them were classically trained. They were, many of them, fluent in Greek and Latin. They were influenced by the Republican model of Rome's government. And then the Republic came to an end. When Rome started transitioning into an empire, the Romans developed, they took control all of throughout all of Italy, and then they moved into North Africa, they moved into Spain, they moved into France, they moved into Asia Minor, to Greece, and Rome began the transition into an empire. The empire lasts from the first century AD, and again until the destruction of Rome by the Vandals about the 5th century AD. Now, what do we have during the empire? What we see is enormous amounts of wealth flowing into Rome. But that wealth doesn't necessarily benefit all the Romans. It benefits the aristocracy. It benefits a new class of entrepreneurs called the equites, from which we get our term equity. They started making money because there were so many opportunities. But again, that the benefits of empire didn't flow to everyone. The majority of the Roman people were impoverished. What happened is, with the advent of the empire, we have a huge influx of slaves, cheap, disposable labor. And that meant that the small farmers now were dispossessed. They lost their farms because they couldn't compete with the import of cheap grain from North Africa, from Sicily, with mining operations going on in Spain and in Greece, gold, silver, iron, shipbuilding, all of these things. And they didn't need the Roman labor to do it. They simply used slave labor. So we have a huge dispossessed mass of people. And they gravitate from the countryside into the cities, and what do? They're looking for work. There is no work. And instead, they're given panem et circenses, bread and circuses. The Roman unemployed go on the dole. They get free grain. They get free bread every month. They get free olive oil. They get free wine. They get free clothes, and there's even a stipend for children. And so now we have this tension in the society, almost as if it's a form of globalization where the small group are making a lot of money over in the empire, and the benefits are not flowing to the population. This causes discontent. And what we're going to see then in the first century BC We're going to see the rise of these leaders. We're going to see the rise of men like Marius, Sulla. We're going to see Pompey the Great, Julius Caesar, Crassus and Augustus, men who begin raising their own private armies, men who now lust for power. And these men will now change Rome, and Rome, the Republic, will be destroyed, and we're going to have the advent of the empire. And the empire will be led by emperors. And so we're going to have 500 years, 400 years of empire ruled by an emperor. And, you know, the emperor, the secret to ruling the empire for the emperor was simply control of two levers, the treasury and the army. We're also going to see the Roman army change. During the period of the Republic, the Roman army was a citizen army where the small farmers, Roman citizens, came forward in time of crisis, you know, to do their part. Well, once Rome becomes an empire, that's going to change. It's going to the army will transition from a citizen-based army to essentially a professional, mercenary army. Many of the poor will look to the army as a way of improving themselves, the army improving their lot in life. The army will offer them a 20-year retirement. The army will offer pensions. It's a living to be made, and there's plenty of opportunity abroad because the Roman army is expanding. Eventually, the Roman army will become the largest item in the Roman budget, and it'll get to the point where the Roman army becomes so huge. The Roman army is everywhere in the ancient world, and when they start running out of Romans to make up the soldiers, they'll begin to turn in the empire to barbarians. And we're going to see barbarians become part of the Roman army, even in command positions.
As I sit here and listen to you, I can't help but think, and I'm sure our listeners are thinking the same thing, how predictive and how much correlation, certainly connection, there is between those times and these times. So tell us, John Purvis, what is it that we can learn that will tell us about America's future? Because it all sounds like history will repeat itself.
Condemned.
In fact,
and we're condemned that, for history repeated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're right on that track.
You know, let me just, can I make one more point that I think is important for your listeners?
Please.
Immigration. Mm-hmm. Romans had a difficult problem with immigration. Once Rome became the center of the ancient world, you know, Romulus started out with a city of mud, just a collection of mud huts on the Palatine Hill, on the banks of the Tiber River. And then eventually under Augustus, the city became one of marble, the most magnificent city in the ancient world, the repository of luxury, if you will. And, you know, the old adage, all roads lead to Rome. Well, they did lead to Rome because that's where the wealth of the empire flowed into Rome, you see. Now, everybody in the ancient world wanted, not everybody, but most people in the ancient world, especially those with looking for opportunity, those perhaps with limited resources, flowed to Rome in an attempt to partake of the benefits of empire. So Rome had a real immigration problem beginning with the empire. And how did the Romans deal with it? Well, the first thing they did is they opened up the army, and immigrants could, that was a path to Roman citizenship. Serve in the army, serve well in the army, became a Roman citizen. Secondly, the Romans built, when that didn't work completely, the Romans started building walls to keep the barbarians out. Hadrian's Wall, the Antonine Wall, the wall. And when the barbarians came over the walls, finally, the emperor Caracalla in the 3rd century A.D. simply gave up, and he said, we're going to make everybody in the Roman Empire who's free a citizen. So they made everybody a citizen. That results in the 4th century A.D. in more pressure as more barbarians start coming into the confines of the Roman Empire looking for better opportunities. So Rome had an immigration problem, and I think some of the attempts to solve it we're familiar. They ring true to us in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Most but definitely.
Getting back to the original question you asked me, and sometimes I have a long way of getting around them.
It's good to hear this.
I don't think we're condemned. I think my own personal viewpoint, and this does not reflect the view of my co-author and friend Steve Forbes, my view is that we have passed our peak. I think we're on the decline. Now, does that mean that people should run out and buy freeze-dried food, ammunition, and guns and bury them in their backyard for the apocalypse? No. I think it's a slow process, but I think we've passed our peak. The world is a far more complicated place. I mean, Rome at its height had no predators. Right. America at its height, and I think our height was probably from the end of the Second World War to the fall of the Soviet Union, we had no predators. We were the superpower. Now the game has changed, Paul. You've got China, you've got Russia. You even have little states that have nuclear weapons and pose a tremendous threat to us. North Korea, Iran, even Syria, you see. Technology has given these what would have been no threat to the United States. Technology has given them an edge. So we live in a very complicated world, Paul. If I can wax philosophical for a minute, I think that we are the children of Damocles. And I think when I say that, I think that our society, America, has given us more freedom, more material wealth than any society on the face of the earth, Paul. But at the same time, we live under the sword of Damocles, suspended by a thread, a nuclear sword, suspended by a thread, and we never know when it's going to snap.
John Previs, what an interesting subject. I certainly could talk to you all day about this. You told me something just before our interview that this is your first podcast interview. You're just a fascinating guest. We would love to have you back. Now, I know in December, just of this last year, you spoke about Hannibal. What are your future plans for the Smithsonian?
Well, I talked about my last book was Hannibal's Oath, which came out in 2017, and I spoke about Hannibal, who of course invaded Italy during the Punic Wars, and the Punic Wars were responsible for transforming Rome from a republic to an empire. On my next talk, I've been talking to the Smithsonian. I think that they, and again, you can check with Lauren on that. They want me to come. Right, they want me to come and speak about Alexander the Great, and my topic would be, was Alexander the Great really great?
Good. John Previs, you're a busy man. What a wonderful guest you've been, so thank you so much today. We are going to put links up to where you can find John Previs, his work, his books, more material and details that you can learn about John offline, but look to the website for that information. John Previs, thank you so much for joining us today.
Paul, thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you, John. My thanks to our guest today. And please check out our website at notold-better.com for more information and conversation. And thanks to all of you, my wonderful audience, for your charming, encouraging, and advice-driven emails with show and topic suggestions. Please keep them coming at info@notold-better.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at notoldbetter. And you can find us on Facebook as well. We are Not Old Better there on Facebook. Podcasts of the Not Old Better Show are available on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio, also on Amazon's Alexa. How are you today, Alexa?
I'm doing great.
Alexa, play the Not Old Better podcast.
Getting the latest episode of the Not Old Better Show. Here it is from TuneIn.
You can always find us online at notold-better.com, where you can find all of our archives. You can share a link, you can get in touch, and I look forward to hearing from you. I'm Paul Vogelzang, and please, everyone, let's talk about better. The Not Old Better Show. Thanks, everybody.